Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds once a month or so, and we welcome Rich Guthrie to help answer your questions about them. Rich is a former NCON specialist, a former compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. He is our resident expert on birds. Also joining us today, Nancy Castillo, owner of Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs. Nancy shows up on this program from time to time. Always nice to have a Nancy join Rich today on the program. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us if you wish at WAMC Radio. Just use the hashtag VoxPop, or go to Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There is a VoxPop post there. But again, the phone number is 1-800-348-2551. Rich and Nancy, welcome back.
Thank you, Ray. Good afternoon.
Hi, Ray.
It's nice to have you here today. And, well, you know, the phone lines are already getting loaded up. But what's new? Anything new before we start?
Well, I'll tell you what's new is that the birds are migrating south already.
Really?
Yes, they're leaving town.
It's just warming up.
I know. The best times are yet to come, but they're leaving. Some of them.
Some are coming, too, right?
No, the returners are few and far between. They're usually lost birds or uncommitted or unattached adults. But the birds that have completed their nest cycle are leaving town.
Who's leaving?
Well, the swallows. Last evening, I was sitting on the banks of the Hudson River and watching hundreds and hundreds of swallows just winging their way south. And they're on their way down to Florida or Yucatan. Or perhaps only New Jersey.
Or New Jersey.
Yes.
Well, in the backyards, though, it's babies everywhere.
That's it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So all of our resident birds are, and some of the ones that will migrate a little bit later than the swallows, but backyards are just busy with babies.
And the babies are a noisy lot, aren't
they?
Well,
they can be.
Well, they're hungry little. They're growing boys and girls. They need attention.
And I think that the bigger they are, the whinier they are. The grackles and blue jays, big birds, whiny babies.
And, you know, that's true with almost any species.
Yes, right.
All right, well, let's go right to the phones at 1-800-348-2551.
On to the phones.
Hey, John, in the cab of your truck, you're on. You got to turn the radio down, okay?
Yeah, the radio's off.
Okay, yay, man, you're on.
Okay, great. Listen, here's my question. In our backyard, we have many, many, many birds. One bird has the most delightful, cheerful, various song. He sits on the top of our giant, old apple tree, and sings this marvelous song. It whistles, it sputters, it chirps. It's a smallish, size of a large sparrow, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Gray bird, a slender gray bird.
Oh, I bet you I know what it is.
Oh, boy.
Oh, good. What is it?
I'm going to say it's a catbird, John.
Oh, that's what I wondered.
Yes. A slate gray color with a little jet black cap and
Go ahead.
Okay, and a long, slender tail that he usually has, usually up at a little angle, just kind of. Or when he's sitting still, he'll drop his tail down and it looks like he's slouching.
Could be. I didn't get the details, but it is a slender gray bird.
Yeah.
That's a catbird. Are catbirds imitative, or is this the catbird's own song?
Well, no, they don't own their own song, and they also don't imitate well. But they are related to the mockingbird. They're close relatives to the mockingbird, so they make a good attempt at imitating, but they kind of make up their imitations as they go along.
And
my God, it's just a glorious song, so various. All day long he sings.
Yeah.
You can also listen for where he gets his name. He makes a little meow from the trees or the bushes where he is, so he does sound like a cat. And the one thing anecdotally we're hearing in the store, a lot of people are reporting catbirds, so I'm thinking it's a good catbird year.
I bet it is. They have, they're mainly insect caterpillar type eaters and berry eaters. So
delicious.
Good job.
John, thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks very, very much.
Are you a long haul trucker, John?
No, I'm on my way up to the Adirondacks for our vacation.
Oh, have a good time and check out the birds. We appreciate it.
I'm envious.
All right, let's go to Nova in Buckland, Mass. Nova, you're on.
Hi. Welcome, Ray and Rich.
Thank you. Yeah. And Nancy.
I do have a funny question about, I've got a couple nesting Pele Woodbuggers are on here.
Mm-hmm.
How do they sound?
How do they sound?
Yeah.
Yes.
Pileated woodpecker. It's pileated or pileated, depending on where you're all from.
Okay.
And they have a, they sound like a flicker. If you know what a flicker sounds like, they sound like a flicker on steroids, but they're kind of like a.
Oh, they're repeated, repeated noises.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a bunch of harsh notes.
Well, wow, that's great.
And it'll go on for quite a while, too.
Hmm. Yes.
Well, the difference, they sound a lot like the flicker, but the difference between the two is the flicker is more prolonged in its cackling than the pileated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they're wonderful to have around, and they're another species that seems to be doing very well.
Good.
And I think part of it may be with the growing number, unfortunately, at the demise of our ash trees.
Wow.
As the ashes are being succumbing to the emerald ash borer, which is a major issue. We haven't yet seen full ramifications of that yet. I would urge folks to become familiar with the symptoms of emerald ash borer and contact the local forestry office in the State Department if you have any questions or see any symptoms of the monitor the spread and infestation of emerald ash borer. But I think the pileated and some of the other woodpeckers, such as the red-bellied woodpecker and perhaps even a red-headed woodpecker, will be the unintended consequences beneficial of that outbreak.
So, in other words, there are more bugs in the dead trees?
Yes.
And,
as the trees are succumbing, there will be more infestations of carpenter ants or termites or other bugs that are attracted to dying trees.
All right. We're joined today by Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo. And let's go to Lynn in Heath, Massachusetts. Lynn, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
You're on.
Hello. I'm just turning off my radio.
Good plan.
Yeah. Well, I wondered what you make of this event that happened a few days ago. A female rose-breasted grosbeak flew into one of our windows and then fell down onto our front patio.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard the crash, so we were looking out there, and I thought she was dying because she shook, but then she put her head down on the stone.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was just lying there, and probably for 5 minutes or so, and then the next thing I noticed was two males and two other females had landed on the patio, and they were kind of around her,
mm-hmm.
a few feet away.
Mm-hmm.
And then this whole thing went on for like a half an hour. She put her head up, and she tried to walk, and she was kind of shaking herself and staggering around. And one of the males was displaying near her and kind of chasing the other male, keeping him a certain distance.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a half an hour, one of the other females went over. This whole thing, it's maybe 10 by 10 feet by 10 feet. Then one of the other females went over to her, like she just went right next to her, and then flew up into a low branch nearby, and then the one that had hit the window flew right up too.
Yeah.
So I never saw them helping each other like that.
Well, here's my thinking on that.
Okay.
That it was not a female, but it was a young bird that looked very almost identical to the females.
Well, that's what someone else suggested, too. And my husband, who's not here at the moment, was adamant that it was a female.
Well.
Because of the lack of striping and something about the coloration on the by the wings.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of variability in the young grosbeaks.
Uh-huh.
And but the behavior suggests that it was the offspring of one of the pair of adults, the adult female and the adult male.
Okay, so they were taking care of their baby there.
Well, yeah, not fully understanding what was going on. It's not something they're accustomed to. They are accustomed to flying up to a baby bird and having it beg for food, and then they feed it.
Yes.
This one was not reacting the way they anticipated, the way they expect it to.
Right.
And And so
they hung around, kind of.
They
kind
hung
of
around,
it out.
And the thing we covered on its own. There's nothing like they did to it, other than to encourage it to fly up, as you suggest.
Right.
So it's all, you know, very unfortunate window collisions, and there's.
Yeah.
There's work going on to see if there's a way to reduce window collisions. And Nancy, do you have some stuff in this that you recommend up there in Saratoga?
Yeah, there's different ways to approach it. You know, if you ever look at your window, go step outside and look at some of your windows, and
right.
like a bird would see them, and you see are reflections of sky or reflection of trees,
yeah.
and you can understand why the collisions occur.
Yes.
So it's breaking up that reflection is key to keeping them from hitting the windows.
All right, well, let's pick that up after our break. Lynn, thanks for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Nancy Castillo and Rich Guthrie, we talk birds today, and we'll pick up that thread on the other side of the break.
Support comes from Washington County Tourism, presenting farmers markets, U-Picks, roadside farm stands, farm wineries, distilleries, and breweries throughout the county. WashingtonNYCounty.com. Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, Saratoga, New York, featuring a children's section with toys, games, activities, and clothing, Northshire.com. Kent Hicks Construction, West Chesterfield, Massachusetts, specializing in energy-efficient, net-zero passive house home building, deep energy retrofits, and historical restorations, serving Western Massachusetts. KentHicksConstruction.com. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Watervliet Ave, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals. HonestWeight.coop. Taft Farms, Great Barrington, 200-acre family farm, harvesting rhubarb, purslane, lettuce, and seasonal vegetables, and offering homegrown flowers, patio planters, and container plants, and heirloom vegetable plants. Open 7 days, taftfarms.com. And Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. RhinebeckArt.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, The Bird Show. 1-800-348-2551, the telephone number. We're joined today by Rich Guthrie, as always, and our occasional guest, Nancy Castillo. And Nancy, you were talking about ways to make windows less of a problem for birds.
Yeah. As I mentioned just right before the break, is that, you know, birds just see reflections of sky, reflections of trees in there, so you can certainly understand why they do fly into windows. The other thing, and what our caller had experienced, is that we have inexperienced drivers out there, young birds.
Yeah, yeah.
Or as we enter fall during migration, birds that aren't as familiar with the area are more prone to hit the hit windows. And they could also, one of the things that we'll never eliminate is when they're fleeing from a predator. Let's say a hawk comes through the yard and there's this mad scurry of birds. So you do have some collisions that are kind of in that flurry of activity as you try to evade a predator. But
yeah.
The main thing is to try to break up that reflection. And there's many things that are out there, window decals. If you have the window decals, you can't just plunk one right in the middle of the window and expect it to,
yeah.
to take care of it. You have to put multiple ones on the window. On the outside is preferable. There's tapes. The American Bird Conservancy puts out tapes that you can put in, like stripe pattern or checkerboard pattern.
Yeah.
They're kind of frosted and a little less, you know, a little bit more attractive. Or, you know, like at our house, we had so many bird strikes on our, we have a chalet type stationary big windows.
Yeah.
And we actually had screens installed about 10 inches out from the window.
Oh, there you go.
So that even if they do fly at the window, they're the impact is going to, you know, they're going to bounce off of that
sure.
screen. And even if they touch the window, it's not going to be with the impact. So there are some approaches. It's, you know, sometimes it's an inevitable, but we can
yeah,
do things to minimize them.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Let's go to Jeannie in Charleston, Four Corners. Is that where you are?
Yep, that's where I am.
You are on.
Okay. I have a currant bush back in my fruit area and went out yesterday to harvest my currants. as I was doing it, and I'm reaching down into the center part of the bush, there's a nest there with about five or six small birds who immediately opened their mouths and so forth like this. So I was being very careful, and I looked around, and there were two sparrow parents that were hovering fairly close, so I decided to break it up and get some of my currants yesterday and get the rest of them today. So I went back out this morning and finished it up, and as I was doing it, all but one of them hopped out of the nest down into the weeds that were fairly close by, and I saw the parents swoop down because they were a little bit farther away from me. I saw the parents swoop down, and they seemed to be calling to the babies or something like that. So I'm can I assume that the babies were ready to hop out of that nest or what?
It's probably a safe assumption. And the parents being nearby will take care of them nonetheless, provided okay. No other predator gets a hold of them if it's too soon. So, I would have faith in the parents feeding the young as if they were in the nest, and you know, provided that they can hop, they can stand up on their own. That's the main clue as to whether
jumped.
Or not.
They jumped out, and I could hear them little scurrying.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Well, they're ready to fledge out. Maybe uh-huh. a little early because of the disruption, but. The parents being nearby will probably likely take good care of them and raise them till they can fly off on their own.
Oh, wonderful. I'm just not going to do any weeding or anything down in that section of the yard for a little bit.
Okay, it should only be a matter of a few days. They'll be off in the, singing from the branch tops.
Fantastic. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, Jeannie.
Thanks,
thank you.
Jeannie. Over to Cindy in Old Chatham. Cindy, you're on Vox Pop. Go ahead.
Hi, I hope you can hear me. I'm in my car.
So far, so good.
I'm calling about, we've developed a problem with what I've been told is a yellow-bellied sapsucker.
Okay.
The problem is, originally we were very excited because a birder told me, oh, this is a very rare sighting. And then they started chipping away at my rafters on my back porch and my wooden barn, and they're very persistent. They are literally taking chunks of wood that are falling onto the porch, you know, a good quarter-inch square. And if you go out and disturb them, they'll fly away, but they continue to come back. And I'm wondering what I can do to prevent that kind of damage.
Okay, well, I'll suggest that you may have yellow-bellied sapsuckers in the yard, which is a type of woodpecker whose main source of food is, in fact, sap from a tree. And any insects that are drawn to the tapping holes that it puts into the tree, it's, you know, sweet sap will draw flies and other insects, and that's part of their menu. Now, what's going to your porch is probably a different kind of woodpecker, and which is unfortunate. Now, they're interested in, if they're actually chipping away at the wood rather than drumming on the wood, there's probably some food in there that they're interested in getting. So that may be your biggest problem, rather than the woodpeckers, who are more or less the tree surgeons.
I know we have carpenter bees that we've tried to get rid of in those rafters.
Yeah, okay. I bet you that might be part of the attraction. So what you can do for the interim is put some burlap up there so that you'll separate the birds and the bees. And
nice.
And that might bring some quiet for the moment, but you'll still have to deal with the business of the bees later.
Okay, so get rid of the bees.
Later, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Thanks,
well,
Cindy.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Cindy, thank you.
Have a good day. Let's go over to Valerie in Rensselaer. Valerie, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And the other night, about 2 weeks ago, I'm looking out the yard at my bird feeder, and there's this big brown thing hanging off my hummingbird feeder. I'm thinking it's the chipmunk who got up there, but when I got my binoculars out, it was the downy woodpecker.
Ah, smart little guy.
Hey, Valerie, are you on a speakerphone?
Yes, I am.
Could you? Yeah, if possible, do the handset. It'll sound a little better.
Okay, is that better?
Much better. Way better.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Right.
And anyhow, he came back again, or she came back again in a couple days, so I wasn't imagining it. Is that... I've never seen that before. None of my friends have. Is that common? What can you tell me
about
that?
No, it's not common, but you got a pretty clever little woodpecker there that has watched the hummingbirds, and maybe somebody else came in there to lap some sap and said, I'll give that a try, and liked it. So,
oh, good. Okay. A genius woodpecker in my yard. That's great.
You do. You got some smart woodpeckers there. Now, you know, get a picture of it, because that not only is it comical to see, but it's also interesting, and I think it will be fun to share.
And okay, I'll try to do that.
And if you do, I'll give an address out later on.
No, you give it right now.
Okay. My address, and you can email it to me. It's my name, Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie, G-U-T-H-R-I-E. Mm-hmm. At gmail.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com. And if you want to present a picture, I'll be glad to, or you may, of course, post it on a website if you like. And that would be a fun one to share.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do my best to get one.
It is fun. You know, probably out of all the non-hummingbird species that we hear testing out hummingbird feeders, that the downy is the one that we hear in the store the most. And, you know, they're going through discovery, just trying to find out what's food and what isn't.
Okay.
I think that's what
Well, thanks a lot for the call, Valerie.
Thank you, Valerie.
Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye now.
Bye now. Let's go over to Warren in Rhinebeck. Warren, you're on.
If I may, first a shout out to Ray and Vox Pop on all the subjects you cover, and a second shout out to Rich for all the bird shows. So
thank you.
And now on to the birds.
Yes, sir.
All right, catbird.
Yeah.
One of the reasons they're called catbird, if I'm not mistaken, is that part of their call or their base call is a kind of meowing or mewing.
Yeah, Nancy mentioned that.
So they're called a catbird. Gotcha. Yeah. Have you heard the expression sitting in the catbird seat?
Yes, indeed.
Well, there you go. And your listeners will know or should know that that's because they always like to sit on top of a tree or even a small shrub, and they're always sitting in the highest place, and that's the derivation of the phrase sitting in the catbird seat.
I'd like to add to that, it's usually in a briar patch, too, where they can see you and get at you, but you can't get at them.
Well, I don't have a briar patch, but I have a couple of sort of trees around my little deck, and they actually, I think their preferred one is an old kind of cedar, and they literally sit, it's like a, 30-foot tree, and they sit up top and just sing their heart out or whatever it is they do.
A little command seat.
They're hilarious.
Well, thank you.
Anyway, now wait, is it catbirds or cowbirds that lay their eggs in others' nests?
That's the cowbird.
All right, yes. I've accused the catbirds of that.
Oh. Naughty.
And let's see. One quick question. Pileated or pileated?
Either or both.
Either or both. Good answer. Okay, last question. Right. How young are turkey vultures before they can fly? And let me just tell you why. I was driving down a pretty rural road here where I am, and I came upon a car, some roadkill in the middle, and as soon as I got close and slowed down, the mom or the dad, sort of flew up into a tree nearby to watch. The two or three little, I think, turkey vulture chicks were sitting there, and they just sat in the road near the carcass and, kind of stared at me. I was, 10 feet from them, and they were goofy-looking little things. And I don't know, could they have flown, or were they just hopping around? This is about three or four weeks ago.
Well, they could have. They could be. Birds don't know what to do about cars.
We had a lovely little sort of stare off for about a minute and a half. I was able to just stop in the middle of the road because there's no traffic, and we just kind of sat there and looked at each other, and they were both ugly and adorable.
Right, and they are. One other thought, though, is that I'm wondering if they might have been black vultures, which look like young turkey vultures. They don't have the red head.
Absolutely. I that was just a guess that they were turkey vultures.
Okay, and black vultures are notoriously tenacious and perhaps stubborn and perhaps bold.
Well, they were certainly stubborn.
Yep.
I didn't see any tenaciousness or boldness, but then again, they were pretty young and fluffy, and they were just, they weren't leaving. They weren't scared.
No. That's like black vulture behavior. But
sounds good. I have no reason to argue with that.
Yeah, black vultures are an increasing species in our area. The numbers are increasing.
Yeah, because I'm about 6 miles inland from the Hudson River at about 650 feet.
Yeah.
So this is not really turkey vulture habitat.
Well, so I would go with either way and suggest that early in the season like that, probably adult black vultures rather than juvenile turkey vultures.
Warren, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Let's get one quickly from email. This one came from Laura, who says, great timing for this show. I had my binoculars out this morning. Fairly large bird landed in the tree in the field across from my front porch. It's not uncommon for great blue herons to go over my house. This was not that, but seems to be in the heron family. I have seen a bittern also. Is that right? Bittern?
Bittern.
Yeah, I've seen a bittern also, but it wasn't that. It had a slate blue-gray body, then up toward the neck it was more rust-colored. I could not tell the color of the head, darker blue or black. It had yellow legs. It perched in the tree a while, and then I guess it preened as well. It says it perched in the tree for a while, preening.
Preening.
Yes.
Well, birds.
That's from Laura from Ephrata.
Well, run through that description again.
For Pete's sake. Why don't you take notes, Guthrie?
I'm trying.
All right, here we go. A fairly large bird.
Fairly large.
It had a slate blue-gray body, and then up toward the neck it was more rust-colored.
Okay. That's what I needed to register.
All right.
We're talking, I believe what we're talking about is a green heron.
Ah.
And they do have that rusty coloration up around the head. They have a slate blue, actually. They call it green heron when it's really not green. It's kind of more like a blue.
Yeah.
A slate blue. So, and they do sit in trees and preen. So I'm going to stick with green heron.
All right. There you go, Laura from Ephrata. Let's go to Roberto in New Windsor. Roberto.
Yeah, hi. Calling because both my wife and I are curious to know about hummingbirds, in the home environment, like in our backyard. We're looking to attract hummingbirds, but we're curious to know that, whether we have a feeder or not, whether you need flowers kind of surrounding the feeder, right? Or can you just put a feeder out?
Okay.
Feeders work on their own. Flowers work better. Both of them are the best.
Both of them are the best?
Any particular type of flower?
Feeders and a flower, yeah. They'll switch back and
together.
Forth.
I see. I got you.
And which is what I have. I have several bright red flowers in the garden and a hummingbird feeder. And they come and go they take their pick.
The good news is that hummingbirds are very easy to attract, either to flowers, nectar-bearing flowers, or to feeders.
And I hear red, it seems to be the color that they're attracted to.
Red, orange, purple, so it's not just the reds. I will very strongly suggest that you use only clear nectar, no dye in your nectar, because every hummingbird feeder that you buy has enough color in it that it's going to attract.
I've seen people use grenadine.
No.
Just pure.
That would be wrong.
Yeah.
No.
You don't want to put anything into that nectar.
Like cherry juice or something. Would that be all right?
Right.
Nope.
No?
Just plain sugar water. One part sugar, four parts water. Just dissolve the sugar.
1 part sugar, 12 parts water. Okay.
Four parts. 1 to 4.
Oh, 4 parts. Okay, gotcha.
All right, Roberto.
I'm on the road, so the audio is a little broken.
Well, thank you. We're doing great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Now, Rich, you have something coming up here, right?
Well, we have a couple of things, and I want to draw attention to if you want to get out and meet birders of from around the state, right here in Albany this year, we're going to have the convention coming up. That will be in the dates again, Nancy?
October
3, 4.
2, 3, 4.
The weekend.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And that will be here in Albany, New York State Ornithological Council.
Oh,
that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a lot of discussion, exhibits, and field trips and meetings. And the famous author, Dunn.
John
Dunn will be there. He's the author of The Warblers of North America.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And he'll be there to talk on Saturday evening after dinner. So it's a great event. For information, you could go to the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, hmbc.org.
HMBC.
Hudson Mohawk Bird Club.org.
All right.
And you'll get all of the schedule, the presentations. And
will you be making a presentation?
I will, as a matter of fact.
On what?
I'll be talking about eBird.
eBird.
I'll be joined by eBird, one of the guys from Cornell University, and I will be together talking about all the ins and outs, the goods and bads, and the ifs and whatever's about eBird.
That's an app?
That is an app where citizen scientists of all levels can contribute to a worldwide information database. Very, very high-tech, sophisticated, and easy, friendly, user-friendly.
Do you have that, Nancy?
Yep, absolutely.
You do? Really?
Yes.
And
yes.
Is it fun to use? Is it user-friendly?
It is. It really is. And what I love to talk about it is that, you know, think about, you know, 50 years ago, ornithologists and, you know, in their little offices or whatever, studying the birds and this small group of ornithologists learning more about birds. But because of technology and stuff like eBird and also participation in Christmas bird counts and Great Backyard Bird Count, yeah, and Project Feeder Watch, all of a sudden there's bird watchers reporting data from everywhere. So
I might add that at that convention, Nancy will be there on Saturday.
Not presenting, but Wild Birds Unlimited will
Wild
be
Birds
there.
Unlimited. Fair. She'll be representing Wild Birds Unlimited. And another thing, and this is, people want to contact me, get out to sea. The end of August, there's going to be a field trip out to the ocean. And
all right, let's pick this up because we're at break time. Let's pick up the field trip in a moment.
Okay.
Rich Guthrie is here. Nancy Castillo is here. And then back to the phones after we find out about the field trip to the ocean. Stay with us.
Support comes from Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, interimhealthcare.com. Schenectady County Historical Society, featuring museum and research, library in the heart of Schenectady's stockade with interactive exhibits, talks, walking tours, and more for adults and children. SchenectadyHistorical.org. SPAC, presenting the National Ballet of China, July 21st and 22nd for 3 performances, featuring the Saratoga performance of the Peony Pavilion, SPAC.org for events and tickets. Taft Farms, Great Barrington, 200-acre family farm harvesting rhubarb, purslane, lettuce, and seasonal vegetables and offering homegrown flowers, patio planters, and container plants and heirloom vegetable plants. Open 7 days, taftfarms.com. Albany Realty Group, a local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com. And H. Houston Son True Value Woodstock, since 1932, a local store featuring hardware, Benjamin Moore paint, and tool and equipment rentals. True value. Behind every project is a true value. HHouse.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. We talked the birds today with Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo, and you at home or wherever you happen to be. 1-800-348-2551. All right, Rich, before we get back to the phones, you have another event, and this is a field trip out to the ocean.
Out to the ocean. We're going out to the Gulf Stream, about 60 to 100 miles out from Long Island.
In a boat?
In a boat.
Okay.
In a good boat.
Swimming would not be.
No, not a thing.
All right.
But, and the object there is the Gulf Stream will bring many tropical seabirds up to our, not to our shores, but to our back door offshore. And so this will be a group of a boatload of people going out there to identify, to look at, to watch, to photograph, and to document the occurrence of these tropical seabirds.
Cool.
Plus all the other good Gulf critters like flying fish and seahorses and sargassum and sharks.
Yeah,
basking
they're popular
sharks
right now.
And, these are the basking sharks, those huge, big sharks.
And
we'll be lucky to see them.
Okay.
Whales and porpoises and... And even the ocean sunfish is almost a guarantee.
Oh, that's terrific. Wow. That sounds like fun.
It is. So contact me, and I'll make the connection for the end of August out to sea.
Is this catered, or you have to BYOB?
You can bring your own food, or there is food on board.
It's
a long trip.
Yeah, it is. Must be, a few days to get out there, huh?
Overnight.
You're not rowing.
No, we're not. We're not sailing. We're power boating.
Before we get back to the phones, here's one that came in via email. Julie writes, I love the show and thanks so much. That's always a good way. A compliment. Chances are I'll read it. I've always thought that catbirds are actually imitating not cats, but the rather unlovely sounds that squirrels make. After all, How often do birds get close enough to a cat to hear it? The other morning, I got a chuckle out of listening to a catbird doing a pretty cheesy version of a robin.
Mm-hmm.
P.S. If ants are plaguing the hummingbird feeders, a little oil of any type on the hanging loop works really well for me. Thanks again. That's from Julie. All right, a couple things to cover there.
I agree. The cats are not imitating cats, but I don't think they're imitating squirrels either. I think it's just how they sound. They make a squeaky cat-like sound. People who were looking at and listening to this bird making that sound said, sounds like a cat. Must be a catbird. So it's not the cat, not the bird. It's the people.
Right.
Okay. Are there
what came first, the call or the name? Oh, the call came first.
The call came long before the people started.
Yep. Are there squirrel birds?
Afraid not.
Okay, let's go
There's
back.
A squirrel cuckoo.
Hey, the other question about the ants on the hummingbird feeder.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to kind of discourage the use of oils around, you know, like as a way to deter ants on that stem, just in case a bird does rub up against it, gets on his wings, and it could impact the flight. There is an easy, really safe way to keep ants out of the nectar. Ants are attracted to the sweet of the nectar. There's a little device called an ant moat. And all it is a little cup of water that you put in between the stem and whatever you're hanging it on, and the ants aren't able to cross the water.
Oh, brilliant.
Some feeders, like our Wild Birds Unlimited brand feeders, have a built-in ant moat. So right in the feeder, right in the middle of it, is a moat for water, and the nectar's on the outside.
And chances are, if you have regular showers, rain, it probably fills itself. You don't have to worry about it.
Right, and it has overflow, so you don't have to worry. And you overflow ducts, so you don't have to worry about it overflowing.
Oh, fantastic. All right, back to the phones we go, and Jim in Montgomery. Jim, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi, I have a hopefully not too silly of a question. I was driving my pickup truck in Montgomery here, not far from my house, and a bird flew across the road in front of me. Small one with a big, long tail.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at my bird book, and the only thing I could see was like a scissor-tailed flycatcher kind of thing.
Sure.
Serious?
Well, entirely possible. Scissor-tailed flycatcher is a Western bird. It's the bird that's on the back of the Oklahoma 25-cent piece.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a state bird of Oklahoma. And they're marvelous, marvelous-looking birds. They usually occur out in the Great Plains, but there is a history of them occurring occasionally in New York State. I remember there was one down in Orange County not too long ago, spent most of the summer down there. There was another one up in St. Lawrence County. And it's entirely possible a scissor-tailed flycatcher. But then there are other potential birds like that. I presume it was not a pheasant with a long tail that you saw. You'd know
it's
that.
Small.
Yeah, small.
Anything.
Yeah.
So I looked in the bird book, and they said that they were, you know, like Oklahoma down that way.
Exactly.
So
but they have
surprised.
Wings, and they can show up. So you were down in Montgomery. Huh. Drop me a note sometime. How long ago was this?
It was this spring.
Okay, this spring. So a month
or
so
year.
Ago. Yeah. Okay. Well, send me the details on that if you get a chance, and I'll share that with my Orange County friends.
What's the email address, Rich? What's
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Good luck with that. Thank you.
I saw a pheasant yesterday, too, as a matter of fact.
How about that?
Do they like to be on the ground running around?
Most of the time.
Yeah.
They're very, very reluctant to fly. They run well. But they do fly on occasion. And when they do it with gusto, but not for long.
Okay, back to the phones we go. It's Sharon in Valencia. Hi, Sharon, you're on.
Hey, I have a question for you. First of all, I love the show and I love the birds. And here in Valencia, I have wild turkeys that come. And I have my hummingbird feeder and all kinds of birds for the suet and other things. But my heart has been feeling heavy because every day, as I head down 203, there is a pond on 203 in Chatham by the John Deere tractor store, and there has been one lone swan on this pond since very early spring, late winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that poor thing must need a companion, and I didn't know if that's typical. There are two families of Canada geese on the pond and one lone swan. Is there anything that can be done to rescue the swan, or I don't even know if this is a normal habitat for them, but it's a beautiful white swan.
I understand. And the answer to your question is no.
No, no what?
No. the swan is on his own.
Oh, God.
Or her own.
And is this a normal habitat here?
Well, with regard to swans in New York, there is no normal habitat for them. The whistling swan will migrate through up to Canada and beyond. The trumpeter swan is found out western part of New York and into Canada. And the mute swan, which is the one this is probably is, has an orange color bill, is found sporadically around southeastern New York and especially down towards the coast and into Connecticut, Long Island Sound. So he's just an isolated individual apart from his, and it is not native to New York. So they've been introduced, they've gone wild, and he's just going to have to find a mate or live a lonely life until... And then later on, he'll move south. He'll move into...
Boca Raton or retirement community.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
He's just enjoying his bachelorhood. Hope,
yeah, exactly.
But he won't become a hermit here.
No.
So it's okay, basically.
Yeah, he'll somehow move on.
Okay.
So don't worry about him. He's on his own.
And I was feeling so sad, but you've given me hope.
Thanks, Sharon, for calling.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye right, now.
Over to Jennifer in Monroe. Jennifer, you're on.
Hi, I love your show, and I'm very excited to be able to get through it. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, our pleasure.
We have this year two barn swallows that nested in our patio, up in the top rafters, and it was amazing to see them make that nest. There are three babies that hatched about 8 to 10 days ago, I think. And you can just see their heads popping up and their fuzzy little heads. I'm wondering how long it's going to take them to fledge. And I understand they fly out. They don't actually drop to the ground.
Right.
Is that true? So how long does it usually take? I would love to be able to see it, if possible, from inside.
Oh, that's going to be hard to predict. Depends on the food supply, the amount of food they're getting from their parents and their own intuition to get up and go. And usually it's about 10 days to 2 weeks that they'll, you know, from egg to flight. So
they might be younger than that then.
They might be. And then when they do, you'll be able to tell because you'll see them hop up to the edge of the nest and flap their wings a lot more. And you know, and at some point they'll flap their wings and find themselves in the air.
Jennifer.
Oh, my goodness. What am I doing?
Yes, right.
If you really want to try to give it a shot, go on to the All About Birds site on Cornell Lab of Ornithology site and go to their bird guide and look up the barn swallow. On that page, they will talk about how long they're in the egg stage, how long they're in the incubation stage, how long after they hatch until they leave the nest.
It's all about birds at Cornell University site.
Right.
Yep.
And I mean, they're still just ranges, but it'll at least give you an idea about the general time when they might be leaving the nest. Hmm. Like Rich said, you have to be, you know, extremely lucky to be able to be stalking out the nest at the time that they do happen to leave. But at least that would give you an idea about if you've been watching them, you know, hatch.
Yeah, I can see it right from the window from the living room.
Mm-hmm. So check out that site.
Okay.
And another question with them. Actually, I had two more quick questions. One, are there predators to the babies? Because there were, when they were a bit younger, two, I weren't sure what they were. They looked kind of like sparrows size.
Okay.
That were sitting on this ornament that was about 5 feet from the nest and just staring at it.
Well,
and the parents would not leave.
Right. A sparrow-type bird that would be hanging around by your porch would be probably the house finch. And they are looking for a nest site of their own. They nest in and around houses, usually in shrubbery. Or a phoebe, which is also a brownish sparrow-like bird, but it's actually a flycatcher. And they, too, like to nest on and around porches. So they may have been eyeballing the nest site to see if it was occupied, but the parent swallows were making sure there was no vacancy sign up there.
Okay,
yeah,
Jennifer, we got to roll it along here because we have so many calls. Heather in Remsen. Heather, you're on.
Hi. I live in upstate New York, obviously, and I have this bird that comes out every evening, and he flies in circles through the valley, and he makes a strange noise that I'm going to attempt to imitate.
Oh, good news!
Oh, good, yes.
Okay.
He sort of sounds like, woo, like that. And I've seen him when he flaps his wings, he does it very fast, like almost like a duck, just at the ends of his wings.
Hmm.
And my mother spends every evening trying to figure out what this bird is by playing various bird calls online.
Mm-hmm.
And she's driving us crazy. So I said, I'm going to call and find out what it is.
Now, in Remsen, New York, what is the habitat like around the backyard?
It's farmland. We have wood. There's ponds.
Okay. You know what I'm going to suggest? Check out the flight call. It's actually not a call, but it's an audio sound made by the snipe, which has that.
It's like Curly from the Three Stooges.
That's the one.
Okay. Well, check out the flight call sound of the snipe, and I bet you that's what it does. That's what you got there.
I love this.
I've only heard him in the evening, though.
Yeah, that's what they do. They're crepuscular like that. So it is evening and perhaps early dawn before sunrise. Give us a call back next time around, and we'll see if that might be it.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks, Heather. We appreciate the call. Always nice to hear from Remsen. Okay, over we go to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim.
Good afternoon. Yay, Ray.
Hey.
Yes, one time I found a chickadee slammed into the windshield of my vehicle on the outside edge of town here in Adams, and I was going up to a farm to get some milk and eggs, and I don't know why I stopped. I saw it fall on the road behind me. I picked it up. Its head just rolled around and around like its neck was broken.
Yeah.
I took him home, put him in my daughter's former finch cage, zebra finch cage, took it down from the attic. I went downtown for another errand. By the time I got back, she said, my daughter, I told her, if he wakes up, you know, let her go. She said, no sooner than you left the house, and he was jumping around like a bull inside there, like he's going to break the cage. So don't give up on our feathered friends.
No, you're right about that, Jim. And along those lines, one of the best treatments for a bird injured like that is actually to put it in a dark box, to close the lid on a box, and let it recuperate in the dark.
Well, it was dark. I put him on the front porch railing.
Yep.
I had the light on the porch, though, just to keep cats away or whatever. My daughter was watching him.
Good.
But as soon as he left the house, went downtown again, he was bounding around that cage like a bullet.
Terrific.
Yeah. Opened the door, and out he went.
Out he went.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Good job,
Jim. So it was just dazed.
Yeah, a concussion.
You know, I always think about cartoons, you know, when cartoon characters would get bonked on the head and they'll put stars and, you know, everything.
I had that happen once. Yeah. Literally saw stars. Not kidding.
Constellations, did you name them?
No, but I mean, you hit the ground hard enough and you'll see. All right, so here's a couple quick emails before we wrap up the program here. This is a pithy question from Julian. Why do mother birds sometimes kick their young out of the nest?
Time to leave.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah.
This one's from Thomas. Hi, Ray, Rich, and Nancy. I love Vox Pop, especially the bird show. You see the compliment.
Yes.
My wife and I have a long-standing argument I hope you can settle. Is it Canada geese or Canadian geese?
It's Canada geese.
Okay.
Our Canada geese can be Canadian or American.
Ah, that's clever. All right, very quickly, we only have 15 seconds for you, Kate and Gilderland. You go on.
Okay, hi. First question is... I love your show first. And secondly, my question is, we have a bird in our yard, and the sound is eerie, eerie. And we call it the Jerry bird, but we don't know the name.
Try Veery.
Veery?
Says his name. Veery. V-E-E-R-Y is a bird that sounds like it says its name. Veery. Veery.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
Well,
and actually, my other question, if you have time, is we had a nest on our front door in our reed. The eggs fell out. We didn't know it was there when we opened and closed the door. I wasn't sure how to safely move the nest to protect the birds.
You have 10 seconds.
You can move the nest. The birds will be very protective of that. They may return to it. If not, but you have to be careful.
Well, I guess we couldn't really give the full answer in 10 seconds, but you did very well. And thanks to Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo for being here. And thank you all for listening. Support comes from the Ashokan Center, a classroom in the wild where nature inspires conferences, festivals, family celebrations, and outdoor education for schools. AshokanCenter.org. Manny's TV and Appliances, family-owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete. Available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores. Manny'sOliveOil.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. And the Hyde Collection, Glens Falls, this summer, featuring the late drawings of Andy Warhol, 1973 to 1987, organized by the Andy Warhol Museum, one of the Carnegie Museums of Pittsburgh, HydeCollection.org. Thanks again to Nancy and Rich for being here. Thanks to you for listening and for calling. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Deb Malik for answering the phones. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. Stay tuned now for the news.